Hey everybody. What? It's a Friday. It's a Friday. I'm in such a better mood that it's just not burning up in Los Angeles anymore. But that said, it's been such a, I feel like, chaotic week for just what's going on with Houston and now with what's happened in Puerto Rico and the islands. It's just, there was this earthquake in Mexico. It's very, I feel like a lot of people are very chaotic right now. So I hope that wherever you are, whatever you're doing, you can take time to take a breath, and maybe center yourself in the midst of this. And if you're in harm's way of a storm, I hope I send all my love to you. So, what we're talking about this week on the show is we're talking about dating, and we're talking about dating in midlife for women, and we're talking about dating with boundaries and how so many women kind of give themselves away piece either piece by piece or wholly to a man that they're dating. And my guest is Sandy Weiner from Last First Date. She has a podcast, she has a website. This was one of those shows where I could have talked to her for like four hours. I didn't. It's only an hour. Don't get me, no, don't be like, oh Jesus. No, not that long. But I just love what I feel like she's talking a lot about. There's a lot about, I feel like, dating for younger people, but for people that are in midlife, I think all this applies for this dating period, because I think if you're young and you're listening to this and you're dating right now, when you know better, you do better. And Sandy does a lot better because she's just learned a lot just from experience, as I know I have in dating too. Lord, the shit I did when I was in my 20s. So hopefully this helps you gain some insight, helps you gain some perspective. And again, she's funny too. So, and I think that we look at, she helps look at the dating as the seriousness of it, but also the just the weirdness of it. And it's just a weird thing. I don't know if it would ever feel normal. I don't know. I'm very, Lord, I hope I don't ever have to do it again. But that said, also, if it's like trying to, but I even feel bad when I say that, because then if you're listening to this and you're dating, you're like, well, thanks, Maddie. That makes me feel like this is going to be really good. So I want to, well, now I feel like an asshole. I'm not an, well, oh well. So no, but with Sandy, I think what she does is that she does actually find more joy in dating, because it's about going into dating with thinking about yourself more and thinking about what's good for you instead of just the other person's needs, which that sounds so cliche, and it sounds, we hear that all the time, but I had a habit of doing that, and I still see people that are doing that all the time. So even if you're in that situation, you're like, well, I've heard this before. Take a listen to this, and maybe something in this will, you'll resonate and actually feel it and hear it for the first time. All right, here you go. Great. And we're recording and what? Hello, everybody. Welcome to the Dear Maddie Show. It's a podcast. We're doing it on beautiful Thursday morning. I'm here with Sandy Weiner from Last First Date. How are you, Sandy?
I am great, Matt. How are you?
I'm good. I'm going to be honest with my audience. You guys, I probably should have pressed record like 20 minutes ago. Sandy and I have been just chatting. I'm telling you, if I had an iced tea in a front porch right now, we probably could sit the whole day, sugar.
That's true.
I think, thanks so much for being on the show. How are you doing?
I am great. It's fun to reconnect with you. You were on my show, and
I
now I'm
was.
on your show.
And I'll be sure to put that show, Last First Date, I'll be sure to put that show in the show notes so people can listen to that.
Awesome.
And so I think, I don't even remember how we met. Did we meet through podcasts, or did we meet through Nicole? How did we meet?
I think that you contacted me probably through an ad I put up to get people on my podcast, or maybe through some PR person who contacted me. I don't know. But somehow you contacted me about being on my show. I loved everything I read about you, and I said, this
And
guy has to be on my show.
that's how I felt about you.
Oh, yay, we love each other.
I know, yeah. That's truthfully, I'll be, you know, it's when I see people that are looking for people for their shows, they need people. I look and go, oh, I want them on my show. So I'll get on their show first, and then they'll come on my show, which it worked.
Your evil plan.
My evil plan worked. Well, and the re The reason that I had you on the show is because we are both in the, well, I started to say the business, but it is our business, but also it's at the core of who we are. It's just, it's helping people live fuller lives, better lives in different ways. And for you, tell everybody what Last First Date is about and kind of how that came about and how you got involved in coaching people with dating.
Sure. So Last First Date is a company that I formed about 8 or 10 years ago to help women over 40, primarily women over 40, to live better lives and date in a healthy way so that they can have their last first date and what I call epic love and toe-curling sex. So it's...
Yes.
I came out of a bad marriage after 23 years, and my parents had been divorced. They waited until I was getting married to get divorced. So we kind of grew up in a home that had a lot of contention and fighting. And so I tried to do differently in my marriage and ended up in a very similar relationship, because we subconsciously do that until we do the work. Mm-hmm. And so coming out of my marriage was a reawakening for me. I realized that I had been disconnected from some of the core parts of who I was to try and make my marriage work. And it's a very common thing when you're in the wrong relationship, you kind of bend yourself into a pretzel to accommodate somebody else and try to keep the peace. And in the process, it's a huge cost, because you lose yourself. And So I had this wake-up call, like, I can't do this anymore. And I really couldn't picture the rest of my life stuck in that place. But I wasn't sure how to get out. So I started reconnecting to a part of me that I had lost back in college, which was I had been an art therapy major, always an artist and mm-hmm. always the person everybody went to for advice and help. Mm-hmm. And art therapy didn't really do it for me. So I dropped out of that. And as I was divorcing, it was like, you know, that part of me, that therapy part, has to be reconnected. That's a part of me I have to reclaim. And coaching came into my perimeter and parameter, and somebody mm-hmm. just said, you know, this is like a field that I think you'd be really good in. And it totally was. I went to life coaching school, I got certification, and that in and of itself transformed my life. It was like, wow, there are skills that we can learn to have a better life and to set mm-hmm. clear goals and to have boundaries and to know what our core values are. And a few years after I started coaching, I realized that I had also been studying on the side how to have better relationships, because I didn't want to screw it up again. And I was helping friends, and I saw how they were making a mess of their love life. And I was like, you know, you're totally misinterpreting men. You are completely accepting breadcrumbs from people. And And one day my friend called me the man whisperer, and she goes, you totally get men. And I'm like, this is interesting. I never thought about doing this as a business. And I didn't even know it was a coaching career. And then I started doing some research and found out, yes, it is. And I just started doing it. And I absolutely love what I do. I watch women transform. First, you know, honoring and loving themselves more, taking care of themselves, you know, the things that we're taught to take care of everybody else and not take care of ourselves. And when you value yourself, other people value you. And if they don't, you don't tolerate it anymore. So mm-hmm. So that's a big focus of my practice. And now what I've really been focusing on is boundary setting. Working on a course now with a co-host who's actually not only a person with a background in social work and has done a lot of therapeutic work with people, but she also was a martial arts expert. And she taught physical boundaries and emotional boundaries for many years. And I love her. Her name is Teresa Byrne. And we are putting together this kick-ass course. It's going to be awesome. So that should hopefully be released soon. And teach boundaries to more people. That is my goal.
Ooh, well, because you started to get me on a soapbox about not a soapbox, but a conversation about boundaries. But because I have like You just in you talking, I've been writing down like seven things I wanted to ask because you brought it. But let me know when you're about when your when your class about boundaries is out, and I'll have you both on the show and we'll talk about it. I would love that.
Ooh, that would be
I would love
awesome.
that. So see everybody, see how I just keep roping Sandy back in because I love her. Okay, so what came up in that for me is a couple of questions about so when man, you just packed a lot. I'm like, oh my gosh, this woman's life. So first off, what do you think it is that you get, quote unquote, about men that other friends notice that that they're not getting?
So first of all, that men and women don't process exactly in the same way. Well, actually, to go around the world in life thinking that everybody thinks the same way that you do and does things in the same way and processes in the same way. I mean, that in and of itself, just to stop doing that with everybody is important. But I think understanding that there are fundamental brain differences between men and women and there are always going to be exceptions, but in general, women tend to speak in story, for example, and men tend to speak in headlines. So, and so if
I have never, sorry, I have to interrupt you, but I have never heard it explained. That is, women speak in stories and men speak in headlines. That's one of the truest things I have ever heard said on this show. That just kind of blew my brain up. I'm sorry, go ahead, go ahead.
Well, I can't take credit for that one. That's my friend Bobbi Palmer, who's also a dating coach for women over 40. I think her husband came up with that one. But it really captures, to me, so much of like women are going off in a story that with everything seems connected to them. I mean, I know when I speak, I see connections in everything. So I can talk about something and then talk about something else, and it's related to that. And a man is listening, and I can see this with my son. We'll go for a walk, and he'll go, "Mom, what are you talking about? I have no idea where are you going with this." So it's, men are trying to track because men want to win. They want to be able to, like, come out winning. So if they're not following you, then they can't respond to you. And women are like, "He just doesn't hear me. He doesn't listen." So it's really about, like, be cognizant of who you're talking to and speak to them in a way that they can hear. And this is true of business too. Like, when you're doing business with somebody who's a bottom liner, and you're speaking in, 500 different connections, you lost them. So that's a big one. And I think another really big one is that men tend to be more single task oriented, and women are multitaskers. And I can still remember back when I was raising my children, and I could be breastfeeding a child, feeding another child dinner, talking on the phone to somebody. And then if my husband had a question, I would be able to answer it. And if he was on the phone and I tried to talk to him, he didn't hear a word I said. And so what happens is, women will talk to a man and he's in a task, in his single task, and he doesn't hear her. She's thinking, "He's ignoring me. What an ass. He's just totally ignoring me." So it's about checking in. It's about asking if it's a good time to talk. And I think this is true for everyone. We should always be cognizant of the fact that somebody else might not be ready to hear us. So that's some of the differences. I think another big difference in the dating arena is that men tend to lead more with sex. They tend to be to connect with sex more, and women tend to connect emotionally more. So first, I think in the end, we all want the same thing.
I
So,
agree with that.
yeah. So I think that when a woman sees a man, and we're talking about heterosexual relationships, and I'm sure that in homosexual relationships, there's somebody with more feminine energy and more masculine energy too. So this probably applies in many ways. But if somebody is leading with sex and wants to connect with sex, it doesn't mean you have to comply. It just, and also doesn't mean that you have to get angry. And I think when a woman is reactive to that and says, I would never sleep with you until I know you, and I don't feel safe with you. It's about connecting and saying, "Hey, I'm really attracted to you, and I know for me, I need to really get to know somebody a little bit better and build some trust before I can sleep with you. So it's not negating, it's not putting a kibosh. But that's a really important piece of staying connected and not making a person feel shamed or shut down.
Well, I didn't, Lord, I didn't do that in my 20s. If you bought me a drink, then and you were handsome, then that was great.
You were easy.
I was easy. So I have another question too that you, so you talked about your own experience of just of you know your and I can relate to this being a child of divorce. I am too. My parents divorced when I was a sophomore in high school. And my brother and I have talked about this, about seeing our parents go through divorce and how we want that to be different. And he's done a great job of it still, I think what 19 years later, he and his wife are going strong and raised two kids and are very happy. I just got into a relationship a couple years ago, so I'm still kind of new to it after being single for a long time. But what I related to, and I think maybe I've done this a little more because I'm a therapist, and so I'm always interested in like the self-work. But I do hear so many people say, my parents were divorced and I don't want to be like that. I want things to be different. But I see a lot of times, and I don't mean this as a criticism, I'm just seeing what I'm seeing, because I really do think for the most part everybody's doing the best they can. But they want it to be different, yet people don't know how to change, to be either aware or to change that. And then kind of like you said, you want things to be different, and then you're going along, and then you realize subconsciously you kind of fall in the same patterns. And I know I'm going to ask, what can we do to change that? And that's like a 3-hour show. So,
I can give you the little
but
highlights of
yeah, I
that.
guess, yeah, I guess I think the, what I'm interested, just kind of like for people today, what are like, what is like the, Oprah says a lot, like when you're overwhelmed or you don't know what to do about something, think about what's the next best step that you can do. And so for somebody who's in that situation, if I don't want my marriage or my relationship to be like my parents, what's the next best step that they could do?
Good question. So yeah, it is about a whole bunch of small steps and not this giant overwhelming, oh my God, there's so much work to do and I can't do it. And so I'm totally lost and forget it. I'm not going to date ever again. It's so recognizing your patterns is a big step. And I think, just journal, write down all the significant relationships you've had and look for common patterns. Look for how you felt in that relationship, because that's going to be a big one. How you were treated. Did you show up as yourself in that relationship, or were you play acting? Did you, as Glennon Doyle, whatever her name is, who wrote Love Warrior, and she talks about sending your representative, because I felt like that most of my life, that I sent a representative out to date and be in relationships and not me. So, look for those patterns, and then the next step after you do that is to look at your parents and see which one of them that person reminded you of. And I think that we tend to go for what's comfortable for us, and until we break the pattern of dating our parents, there is this subconscious need to heal the relationship with the parent that we had the hardest time with. And that was a huge aha for me, is that I think I married a combination of my father and mother, but I think that I was looking for the opposite and ended up with the same because I hadn't yet done this deeper work. So it's not a quick fix, but it's not
No.
that complicated either. I think that when, like, I dated somebody recently when I was on my trip in Israel. I was just telling you about going on Tinder in Israel. And this guy was telling me about his bitchy wife and then this bitchy girlfriend. And he said, I just really feel like nice guys finish last. And I'm going, no, nice guys don't finish last, actually. Nice guys who are doormats finish last, and nice guys who end up, accepting garbage in their dating lives finish last. But nice guys are actually really attractive. And he said, well, how can I stop dating the same, you know, I said to him, you have a pattern. It's pretty obvious. You're attracted to bitchy, you know, controlling women. And he said, well, how do I break that? What's, you know, do you think it's a coincidence? Like, no. And I said, you know, do you really want to know? Because, you know, I don't usually coach people on a date, but I knew I'd never see him again. And I said, this is, you know, this is what I do for a living. You know, which of your parents did you have the most difficult relationship with? And he said, my mother. And I said, well, you're going to continue to date your mother, hoping that you can fix that relationship until you go to therapy and work this out, because, you know, you've got to heal that within. So it's really not about fixing it with somebody else. It's about really working through it yourself. It's about learning to forgive. To a friend of mine said this the other day. It's a quote she learned in recovery, and it was basically, "Don't go to a hardware store looking for oranges." And
Oh, yeah.
this is like such a common thing that people do in dating. You know, you date somebody and you hope they'll be somebody else. So you can't fix somebody. You don't go in hoping to fix them. They are who they are, you know. And I certainly believe that when you're dating, you know, 30, 40, 50 years old, people are pretty cooked already.
Yeah, but yeah, don't. If anybody who says, you know, the whole marry the man today and change his ways tomorrow from gods and dolls, I mean, but I've heard people say that, and I'm like, oh man, that's not getting married, having a baby, is buying a home is not going to fix anything. I just want to tell people those three things are not going to fix anything. In fact, it's going to make it way worse. And I want to. I want to. I've got a couple. Just so many more questions now, Cindy. Well, I just want to add that, you know, you were said earlier that people date what they're comfortable with, and I want to kind of maybe add some more context to that too for people listening. That when we say the word comfortable, and I think I know, I'm pretty sure I know how you mean it, but clarify if I'm incorrect. But you know, when you think a lot of people think of the word comfortable, we're not talking about what is good comfortable. We're talking about, you know, I've had friends that, you know, they have parents that are in a maybe physically or emotionally abusive relationship. And that is what, so I'm at, if you're listening to this, comfortable, we're not talking about cozy comfortable. We're talking about what's the normal for, and so, and a lot of, and that's why we get, and you have a, parents that are in a, I hope not, but it happens. A very, let's say your parents are in a physically abusive relationship, and then you wonder, well, how did I get into this? And it's, that's because it's a lot of, I know with coaching a lot of queer clients that dating often sometimes, especially the later and later you come out in life and start dating. So it's, so like I would say this for, you know, queer people that are listening, but that especially that are coming out later in their late 30s and 40s and stuff, dating I found in coaching with them can be very hard because they are normally used to feeling so much shame and feeling bad and feeling like they're going to hell about just a simple connection. So it's, that's their comfortableness. That's what we're talking about here. So it's about retraining what is quote unquote like the new normal for you, and realizing creating the new normal from the ineffective, not helpful normal. So I just wanted to say that for people.
No, I appreciate you clarifying that. And I would say instead of comfortable, maybe use the word familiar. And because what's
Oh, that's a
familiar
good
to
one.
you, right, is what you grew up with, and it's not necessarily healthy for you, but it feels familiar, which feels comfortable, but it's really uncomfortable because you really you're not happy
You're
with
not
that.
happy, yeah.
No.
Not at all.
So that's, thank you for that clarification.
No, I just I and well, and also too, this is, I want to ask too, like, we do have a question, and I, there's two things I want to talk, just so you know. I want to talk about accepting dating breadcrumbs. But I also want to talk about, and maybe we can do Israel first. I'm interested in, and you wrote a blog post, so I'll put the link to this. I mean, your website, lastfirstdate.com. I think that's, it's lastfirstdate.com. Yeah, lastfirstdate.com is going to be on the show notes. But I'm interested in just kind of with just kind of what's happened, and maybe this is somebody who's, you know, I'm a very big Wonder Woman fan, and I'm very excited about the movie coming out. And but what one of the things I'm excited about the movie is I'm excited about hopefully just new role models and things and women and people thinking about what is feminism and what is equality for women and things like that. And so just, you know, as a dumb American who's speaking, like, what was the difference just on kind of on a basis of that you felt in dating in Israel is the way were you treated differently just as a woman than you were here in America or the United States? Or did you feel like it was similar?
It was actually different for me, and it was surprisingly different because my experience when I was 18 and I spent my gap year in Israel, I went on one date there and the guy was like all about sex and, you know, touching me the whole time. I was like, get your hands off of me. And, so that's what I thought I was going to have when I was going to date again. So I did it out of curiosity. And the guys were really respectful. They were much more serious-minded than the men on Tinder in America that I had experienced. Mm. They asked me, are you planning to move to Israel? Like, you know, they didn't want to waste time with some woman who's just visiting, you know? They're more blunt, I would say, that Israeli culture is very... no BS, you know, so people will say things to you that sometimes you wish they had a filter, like, yeah, you're looking fat today. You know, we Americans, we couch everything in niceties and, you know, sometimes really like we have no idea what somebody really means because they're just being so full of it. And I like the truth. So I felt that they were much more down to earth. And that was my experience, and I was pretty popular there. I mean, it was nice. It was nice to really be at Choice and to have fun, because I was there for almost a month helping my daughter, who moved to Israel in last year, and she has two little kids, and so I was able to help her go on dates, do my work, have fun, and I made a connection with one guy in particular who's actually, I think, in Philadelphia this week, and we may go out again. But it was really just to have an experience of, like, you know, culturally, people are different in different places. And I think it's important to be open to finding love in a surprise package and and not to sort of script the whole thing. I remember talking to a guy in his 30s who got married, I guess he was about 33, 34. And he said so many of the women he dated back before, you know, in his 20s, were they had a whole script planned. And it was like they were just looking for that player to fit the husband part, you know. And it was like they had, you know, so there was no wiggle room. And I think we do that often. We have our whole list of character traits that somebody had, not character traits, acts, just like looks and height and all the stuff that doesn't matter. And I'm seeing it more and more. I have a Facebook group that we have over like 1,200 people in there now. And it's for single women over 40. It's called Your Last First Date. And women write in their struggles every single day. So I get to have my hand on the pulse of what's happening in this demographic every day, all day. And the ones who are succeeding are the ones who are dating the guy who's an unemployed musician with diabetes, but has an incredible character, and they laugh together and they're having a great time. You know, it's not the ones who are, I'm not dating somebody who's under 6 feet tall.
Exactly. When you said something too that I think is very important, you said when you were talking about dating in Israel, you said that I was open to the experience. And I feel like that's something that changed for me with dating when I just let go of my preconditions of what I wanted for people, like you were just saying. But also, I realizing that if I'm open to this process and I'm not judging someone, if I'm actually, because for me, I realize if I'm judging someone, I'm actually not listening to them. I'm not listening to them. I'm not seeing them. I'm basically, honestly, for me, when I'm judging someone, that's my fear judging them, because my fear is really judging me. And so, talking about that mirror, sugars. But so... But I also say, like, I got really good at being open. And so I don't mean that in a sexual way, but I did in my 20s. But, like, I have a really good friend, my friend Nicholas. And I got like so open. I would be like, he would be like, well, how is your dating life? That's the way Nicholas talks. I always talk like him. And I was like, well, you know, and I would like say, well, I met this guy and I think he's nice, but you know, I know that he's like, I mean, literally I'm like listing like, cause sometimes basically like, I remember one time I was going to date, he was like, basically he was really open and honest with me, but like, he like, he had just gotten in recovery and he was basically homeless, like in a halfway, like he, but like we met and we, he was a really nice guy. And like, I still see him now some like on social media, he's on his feet and stuff more better. But I did notice that like, but my friend at that time, he was like, no, you can, he's like, this is too much. And so I say like, what is the difference? And I'm glad he's right, because I kind of followed that person did kind of have, you know, and that wasn't his low, and he went to a much lower place, and that would have been probably very difficult for me. So the question I want to ask is, can you be, what's the difference of being open to possibilities and then just not dating to your self-worth?
Big difference. Yeah. So, you know, what I say with my clients is you really have to know, number one, who you are, what your core needs are, and make sure that you're meeting them and that other people respect them. And also know how you want to feel with a person and what's super important to you. So four or five things that are really important, kindness, trust, you know, whatever those things are. And those, you cannot sway from that list. And also know what those deal breakers are, because one deal breaker, so like that nice guy, he had a deal breaker. It was a big one, you know, that he was in recovery and he was, you know, dipping down low, that he would not be available to you for a relationship. So that's...
Yeah,
that's,
yes, and I want to clarify, that's what it's about. It wasn't that he was struggling with addiction. I'd have no judgment of that, but it was like he was in the throes of kind of getting himself together and wasn't going to have time for us. That's, yes.
Yeah. So knowing that somebody's not emotionally available, I don't care how nice, good-looking, amazing they are, it doesn't matter. One deal breaker makes everything else null and void. So people look at the shiny stuff and they tend to push the deal breakers under the rug. Well, but you know, the sex is great. Oh, but you know, the conversation, the banter is amazing. I just spoke to somebody who I met on an online dating app who lives in England. We became friends and we Skype every once in a while. We just spoke this morning after a long break, and he told me about three women that he recently dated, and he showed me pictures of them on his phone, and they're like all gorgeous women, and each one of them had a big red flag, each one. And so, you know, not available because of this, or, you know, beautiful but dumb. But a lot of people will totally overlook those things. So when you do that, you're really not valuing yourself, and you're just going to end up in a terrible place, you know, down the road. So yeah, recognizing those signs early on is important. And that's something that I teach and I practice myself. And I was dating somebody a couple months ago who on paper was great. We had an amazing connection. He told me he was attracted, that I was really special and blah, blah, blah. And after two dates, he started to kind of disappear and, you know, send me a text at the end of the week. I'm so sorry. I haven't been in touch. Work has been really busy. And then how about we see each other next week? And then I don't hear from him. So, you know, I don't want to be a yo-yo, and that doesn't work for me. And he said, well, let's get together next Monday. And then Monday came and went. I didn't hear from him, and that was it for me. And next day, apologized. So sorry. Work was crazy. Please forgive me. And I said, I can forgive you, but I don't want to date you anymore. Because obviously work is more important than a relationship to you right now. And that's fine, you know, but I need to be with somebody who's going to prioritize me. So that's coming from a place of value. I'm not criticizing him. You know, he can do whatever he wants, but not to me.
Yeah, yes, that is a great way to look at it. And I think the list is so important, too. I had a friend who had been dating, and he was in really a pretty terrible relationship at the time. And I asked him, I said, you know, just write out 20 things. I said, or no, I even said 10 things that are important to you and somebody who's a partner. And he ended up writing like 20 or 30. And the only thing that the only thing that the person he was dating at the time checked out with is that that his current boyfriend had a really hot ass.
Oh.
And that was, and I was like, but I say that, and that, you know, I think we've all been in those learning situations. And so I do say, I think like what you mentioned earlier, journaling is so, and writing things out is so important, because often the contracts we make in our mind change with our emotions. Mm-hmm. Whereas if you make a written contract, it's still written from an emotional place. But usually when you're, I would say more than not, when you're in that place of writing things out, often you're clearer, you're more in line with your intentions and your goals in life. Whereas in the moment, those contracts totally change because of emotional kind of either hang-ups or things that often veer us off the other way. So anyway, a nice ass isn't going to cut it, everybody. That's going to fade.
It's going to fade, right. And that's the thing.
Believe me, I've been to the gym. I've seen the guys that are buff with buff chest. You know, really an ass shows your age. I see like the guy, and I mean this in a good way. I'm sorry, I'm totally gay DD tangent. But I remember like I've been trying to go to the gym more. And so like you see like, and it's really kind of the first time I've actually done it. So I've seen like, you know, men in the shower. And like I remember seeing this like very nice looking kind of like he's like a silver daddy guy. He was probably in his like late 60s, really fit, like had the chest and still the ass. And all that, and I was like, wow. And I was kind of more not like sexualizing him, but more just like, good for you, man. Good, mm-hmm. Go you. And then he turned around and I saw his ass, and I went, I've noticed that your ass shows your age. I guess unless you get your ass fixed, but like that's really gonna fade. Just gonna fade.
You can have an ass lift, right?
You're gonna have an ass lift. We're gonna answer this question, but one more thing that you talked about that I want to hit on is, and you have a video about it on your website, and you talk about it a lot. And don't spill all the beans, because people need to go to lastfirstdate.com to get all your goodies. But what are like two kind of dating breadcrumbs that you feel like women accept from men?
So first of all, you know, you talked about being sort of future focused or judgy. It's like when you're not really present with somebody. So mm-hmm. women tend to be much more future focused, I find, than men. So they're like on the first date planning the names of their children. You know,
that was me.
That was that you, was, right?
Oh, that was me. Yeah, for sure. But yeah, so, I agree with that.
Yeah. So if you are, you know, the future focused person and then you start getting really anxious when the person that you're dating doesn't reciprocate. So the anxiety starts, and then you're all up in your head, and you know, you build a relationship before there is one. And I certainly was guilty of this too years ago before I did this work. Mm-hmm. So what happens is you're really not yourself. You're putting somebody on a pedestal and you accept whatever they give you. So, you know, any little glimpse of attention is like, oh my God. You know, I remember in seventh grade, the guy I had a crush on, if he looked my way, I would like break out in a sweat, you know, oh my God, mm-hmm. attention. So those are breadcrumbs. Those are little crumbs of attention. And we had somebody actually in our Facebook group who kept talking about Mr. Potentially Awesome, which, you know, that was a big deal for her to add the word potentially. But she still was completely crazy over him, and she was excusing the fact that he was not that attentive. Well, he's got kids, you know, he's got a kid who's graduating, so he didn't text me this week. It takes 2 seconds to text and 5 minutes to call. And, you know, so making excuses when a person isn't attentive, and also not speaking up and letting a person know what it is that makes you happy. So I have a client right now where the guy she's been with for a bit, he's been inattentive as of the last couple days, and she needs to have that conversation with him that, you know, what would make me really happy is talking to you every night before we go to sleep, you know, whatever it is that works for you. If you're not speaking up and saying what would make you happy, and then you're teaching somebody that you don't really need much, and they're going to give you less and less. So that's part of the breadcrumbs too, is somebody who just kind of gives you a little bit of attention, and you're already sleeping together, so, you know, you're already there. You don't really have to pay that much attention to that person. Mm-hmm. But, yeah, don't be so easy in terms of, you know, let somebody have to earn their way into your life, too. It's a it's a back and forth thing. Relationships are, you know, should be about mutual give and take. And so don't be, I think what women often do in my experience is they give, because they were trained to be givers, and then they're depleted and they get resentful, and then all the resentment comes out in an attack, instead of, you know, be careful about who you give to, you know, make sure that you're getting back.
Amen. Amen to that. That was great. Great, great, great. Now, okay. So let's get into a question. Let's talk about some sex.
Okay.
Because I do have a question from a listener. I love this name. It's from Dinah. You don't see that name a lot anymore. Dinah, Dinah's age 52. I thought this was I've never had a question like this before. So, but we'll read it. It says, Dinah writes, "Dear Maddie, I'm writing you because my best friend thinks I have a problem, but I'm not sure I do. I've been happily married for 23 years. My husband and I don't have too complicated of a life. No kids, 3 dogs. Life feels full. However, my girlfriend thinks it's weird that my husband and I don't have sex a lot. Currently, we have sex about once a month. And it's fine. I love my husband very, very much. He is my soulmate. But honestly, he was never that great in bed. And the longer we were together, it just seemed to fade away. When we were younger, we both talked about it and he worked on it, but it just never changed much. I'm not upset by this because he is there for me in so many other ways. I told my girlfriend that there are more important things than sex. Yet she says we're missing out on a piece of intimacy and connection. What do you think? Is this a problem I should talk to him about?" This is from Dinah, age 52. I love this question because I think it's, I've heard so many women and some men and like in gay men, but I have heard people say, you know, the sex isn't great, but man, he's such a provider for my family. He's so kind to me. I love him very much. I know he loves me. That's not important. Is that a healthy thing to say? And again, maybe for some people it is, but what's been your experience with that?
So she keeps saying she's okay with it, and I think that's the key. If she had a healthy, you know, sexual appetite where she wanted to have sex 5 times a week and he wanted it once a month, they would be really mismatched, and she would feel resentful. But there's no resentment in this I can hear at all. And I think sexual compatibility really has to do with frequency, that you both have to be on the same page. And the type of sex, you know, if you're with somebody who likes kinky sex and you like, you know, mission position, it's probably going to be a problem. Somebody who wants an open relationship and you don't, you know, it has to be that you have an understanding that it works for both of you. So that's what I feel. I mean, it sounds like it was more of a problem in the beginning. She may be denying her needs and unable to express that because she has everything else and she's afraid to upset the apple cart, so to speak.
Maybe. I know. This is the one thing about if I could have a show where I could go and meet all the people that write in and ask more questions, because I can tell you are too. You're like, oh, I want to know more of the story.
Exactly. It's hard to know, because she does say in the beginning she talked to him about it. So I don't think this is something she can talk to him about. It's pretty obvious. He has a low sex drive. It doesn't match hers, but she seems to have been okay with it. And you know what? I spoke to a friend of mine yesterday who had a really, really strong sex drive her whole life. And she did a lot of fun things sexually and dated a lot of players and had a lot of fun. But when she was really ready to settle down again, she ended up with a guy who, you know, they have an okay sex life, but she said, it's not that important to me anymore. She's in her late 60s. She said, you know, having somebody who's stable, who's got my back, who really is there for me, as opposed to these other players that she was with, that became more important. So I do think that sometimes it isn't as important as others, you know? So hard to know. What's your take on it?
Well, I was excited to have you on the show because I kind of felt like that too. I was kind of like, hey, if it's not a problem for you, then why create one, you know? And so I wanting to talk to her, and that everything that Dinah writes seems very, very honest, and she's kind of articulating very clearly how she feels. And I know other people, especially women I know that have said this, that there's a difference of people that really are fine with it, but I do know some women that say that it's fine, and I can tell that it's not.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So I don't think that's the case, Dinah, but if you're listening to this, I hope you are, you know, if you... That's the only thing I would ask you kind of to dig a little bit, is that just to make sure, are you really fine about this? And mm-hmm. are you saying this because you don't want to feel shameful, or you don't want to feel like something is failing about your sex life or anything like that? And you know, that might be like a 1 minute thought process for you going, I still feel pretty good with it. And if you're in that place, then great. That's the only thing that I would, you know, kind of quote unquote, the advice I would give to Dinah is just not to question what your friends are thinking, but just question anything you're thinking, making sure that, you know, you said he worked on it, but it just never got better. Hopefully you're okay with that. Hopefully you don't have any resentment about that. You know, those kind of things, more stuff really about you and not him. And then if you find out that you're not fine, then write us back and Sandy and I will work it out. No, well, yeah, we will. We'll work it out. But also, too, then that warrants a conversation with your husband. But, yeah, Sandy, I kind of went along with you at this. I mean, it's I think if, you know, the thing she says about is that she loves her husband very much and she calls him her soulmate and that he's... that he's very, very much there for her, and if she, and I mean, she even said life feels full. Yeah. So I'm like, hey, then live it, live in it, girl, live in it.
Yeah, and especially they don't have children. I mean, they are they're together. I mean, when you don't have the distraction of children, your relationship is even more pronounced. So if they can make it for 23 years with just them and some dogs and having sex once a month, then go for it. And you know what? There's always vibrators if there's
a problem. Yeah, exactly. I just was listening to Katie Couric. She actually has a really great podcast that I've really enjoyed listening to. And she does interviews, you know, with celebrities and people like that. But one of them she did was with Ina Garten, who's a barefoot Contessa, who I love Ina Garten. I love her cooking and everything. But she asked, you know, she was talking about Ina's relationship with her husband, Jeffrey, and she's like, it seems like you both have the perfect marriage. And she said, chuckling, she's like, well, we don't have kids, we don't have dogs. And she's like, and luckily we've been okay with money. She's like, and those are the things people fight about. And I kind of said, you just said that in a sentence, but it is kind of, the people I know, they're stressed about, even right now, my boyfriend and I, my dog is in the process of heart failure and is dying and kind of going to the bathroom places and all that. And we both have snapped at each other a couple of times just because we're stressed about the damn dog, you know?
Yeah.
Luckily, we kind of stop and we fix it. But anyway, I just thought that was a funny comment.
Yeah, but there's a lot of truth to that. And
there is a lot of truth to that.
And he's getting fed really well, too. So that's a good thing.
Exactly. He is getting fed really well. Okay, so we're wrapping it up. It's Chatty Maddie. I told you the show was going to be 30 minutes and it's over, Sandy, because I just knew it would. So Chatty Maddie questions, same five questions I ask everyone every week. So number one, what is your most memorable childhood smell?
So I would say my mom was a baker. She used to bake something called Ruggelach, which a lot of people have heard of. They're basically yeast, little rolled yeast, cinnamony deliciousness. Mm-hmm. She still makes them and I still love them. So that's a yummy memory.
I've never had Ruggelach, but I know of people have talked about it. Chatty Maddie number two, what would be the name of your memoir?
So I started writing my memoir a couple of years ago. I never finished it.
Oh, you're the first person to ever say that to me. Cool.
It's called The Love Optimist. And
I love that. Yeah. That's so true. That's who you are.
It is. So I have to go back and write it. That and my other three books that I started.
Oh, I love The Love Optimist. Okay. What's the best piece of advice you wish you'd taken earlier in life?
Well, I got a lot of crappy advice. You know, I just got together with a friend of mine who knew me when I was dating my husband. And so this isn't exactly the answer to your question, but I said to her, I said, did you see any red flags when we were dating? And she goes, a lot. And so I said, really, what kind of red flags did you see? And she said, well, you really were so immersed in that relationship so quickly, and you were losing yourself. And every time you would talk to me on the phone, he would try to get you away from the phone and get back to him. And we were really concerned about you, that he was trying to like consume you. And I was like, wow. And then she ended up just kind of leaving my, you know, she distanced herself from me. And I thought it was because she was jealous that I was getting married and she wasn't. And, you know, and I felt terrible. But it was so good to be able to be honest with each other and to hear what her experience was, because she was absolutely spot on. So I wish that she would have shared her reflections with me. I don't know that I could have listened to it at that time, but it would have been really good advice to just say, you know, don't lose yourself for a man.
Yeah, that's it really is a sign. If all of your friends do not like the person you're dating, this is not the right person for you. I mean, if they're good, true friends. And yeah, again, I see that a lot. I see that so much too. But yes. Okay. What day would be your Groundhog Day?
I just
want to clarify by that. I mean, like, what day was so great that you're like, oh man, I could do that over and over.
Oh, okay. What day could I do over and over? Wow.
Or you can give me the answer you thought of too. I'm just interested in you, Sandy. Whatever you want. Oh,
thank you, Maddie. My original first gut response was, you know, basically the whole end of my marriage, where it felt like I was living the same day over and over again, and wished I could get off that train. I mean, I've had some amazing moments, like delivering my TEDx talk. That was such a powerful experience.
Sorry, I don't read bios. I forget. But yeah, you guys, like, go on Sandy's website. Like, you know, I do a podcast in my living room, but like, Sandy's like, I think Huffington Post. I think, weren't you on like, the magazine, the Psychology, what is it, Today?
Yeah, it Mind, Body, yeah. Green, Good Men Project. I write for a lot of publications.
Yeah, like, you guys, she's a real deal. So anyway, sorry, I'm terrible. I'd never read bios because I want people to talk more organically about who they are.
Yeah, yeah.
So, but I should have told you that. But yeah, like, Sandy's a real deal. So what was it about? Let's talk about that a little bit. The TEDx day, like, what is that? Were you nervous? Was there pressure? I mean, that's a big deal. That's a big thing to talk at. So what was that like?
Well, I was never a public speaker. I was the most afraid of public speaking. And
oh, wow.
So this was huge for me. This was me getting so far out of my comfort zone for the sake of my mission of not playing small and being able to share my message to more people. And I knew that as I was stepping into this new life after my divorce, that a lot of things had to change, that in order to really show up in life, I had to show up. I had to show up in a big way. And so public speaking was a big one. And this opportunity came, it just fell in my lap. It was a friend of mine just connected me with an organizer of a TEDx conference. And she was like, do you know anybody who's passionate about something? And she said, yeah, Sandy, my friend, she's a really passionate person. And she goes, what are you passionate about? I go, well, I'm passionate about helping people find, you know, love and stop making the same mistakes. And she goes, okay, what topic do you want to talk about? And I gave her two topics. And she goes, okay, you're in. I'm like, what? How did that happen? So now I'm like freaking out, you know. So I'm sort of a leap before you look kind of person. I take these huge emotional risks and then I go, oh my God, I'm going to fail. And then I take a breath and then I go, okay, how do I succeed? Get support, you know. So I hired a coach to help me with my speech, and I joined Toastmasters, which helped me to get less afraid.
Toastmasters is fantastic.
So fantastic. And I still, 4 years later, I'm still going every week. I've served on the board. I'm a mentor to many people now because I know what
wonderful.
It feels like. Yeah, it's changed my life and given me so much more confidence. I mean, I never would have had a podcast. I mean, I was afraid to call into a podcast, let alone host one and, you know, be interviewed by people. But this is my life now. I mean, you have to be on video. You have to do all these things. So, and the topic of my TED Talk was really, it's about living my life as a Tootsie Pop, which is basically putting hard layers in front of my heart to protect myself from pain, and how I had to learn to take the guards off and become a Heath Bar, which is, which is more strong on the inside and soft on the outside. And to let love in, no matter who you are, you have to be vulnerable, and you have to learn the skills to strengthen yourself internally in order to be able to release all those tough guards that you put around your heart.
Well, this is fitting for this last question, because I'm feeling it right now. Chatty Matty number 5, when are you most inspired?
I am most inspired when I speak to people like you who are, you know, doing work that you love and helping people. I'm blessed to have so many people in my life now who are really aligned with their mission and inspire me every day. So, and also seeing my clients make progress and start to love themselves more and live better lives, that inspires me tremendously.
I love talking to you. You're so kind and you're just so smart. Sandy, okay, so everybody can find you at lastfirstdate.com. And so that's, you know, lastfirstdate.com. It's in the show notes, everybody. Where else can people find you? Or is that the place to go?
Well, I think if there are women listening who are single and over 40 or in relationships and over 40, I would love for them to join my Facebook group. It's called Your Last First Date. And I do Facebook Lives now every Sunday. So, you know, I'm really sharing all the information that people are seeking about all the complexities of dating at this age and relationships. Dating people with children, how do you deal with things like that? How do you deal with erectile dysfunction and all kinds of things that come up that don't come up in your 20s as much? I love getting people in there because I feel like then I'm sort of just meeting them every day. If somebody wants to set up a time to chat, I do a free chat with people. I can give you the link to include in the show notes. I call those my Find Epic Love sessions, and I help people to really get clarity about who their ideal partner would be and to uncover some of the blind spots and challenges that I see.
I think that, you know, I want to encourage people that either feel awkward or feel shameful or weird or feel like, you know, why do I need a dating coach or things like that? It's, we don't think twice about having a coach in business. And we don't think twice, a lot of people that are go to a church or a temple, or we don't think twice about talking to our rabbi or our priest or whatever, about, you know, medical issues in our family or whatnot. But I do feel like people still sometimes have hangups with realizing or not feeling like, I think maybe because they think other people find people so easily that it should come easy to them, and it's not something that they should work on. So if you're listening to this and you've been having a difficult dating life, this is not something you need to take on just for yourself. This is something that we're not taught. Lord knows I didn't learn how to date from my own parents. They met when they were in high school, when they were 17 years old, you know? So, and then, you know, they had to learn to date when they were both in their 40s and single. And so, it's something that if it wasn't for my own therapist at the time, I definitely would not have found, the person that I feel like is my soulmate. So I just want to encourage people, if you're listening to this and you're thinking, oh, maybe I would contact Sandy, but I don't know. I don't really need that. You probably do. You probably do need help, and there's nothing shameful or wrong about doing that. So follow the link at the end in the show notes and reach out. Like, this is something, this is honestly who you connect with as a partner, unless you want to be single your whole life, which is great too. But if you want somebody in your life, this is, besides the maybe the relationship with yourself, this is probably going to be the second most important relationship in your life. So, like, work on that, people. Sorry, I'm going to get off the soapbox, Sandy,
but I
just wanted to say that.
I really appreciate that. I think there is a lot of shame, and a lot of people contact me and they go, like, I can't believe it's come to this. I can't believe I need a dating coach. And I'm like,
and that's not the case. No.
And I say, you know, good for you for actually taking charge of your love life. And it's so much more. I mean, You know, it's really about being a better human, you know, and it's about enjoying your whole life, you know, because if you're having trouble in dating, you're probably also having trouble with your friendships. You know, people are probably so-called taking advantage of you and you're not feeling fulfilled in other areas of your life. And so when you work on this, it has a ripple effect and it will change every aspect of your life. And you know, the difference between who I was back when I was married and feeling stuck and dead and who I am today, it's like I was reborn. I mean, you know, doing this work changes your life in such a way that you start really attracting in high quality people everywhere in your life. You attract in more money, you know, it just has a spiral effect. So I would love to help more people. That's my mission.
That is your mission. That is Sandy Weiner's mission from lastfirstdate.com. Sandy, thank you so much for being on the show today. We could go for 2 hours. So, and I would love to, you're going to be on the show again because you're just helpful. So,
thank you.
Of course, of course, of course. So for everybody else listening, you know the drill. I'm going to talk to you right now on the show out notes, but thank you again, Sandy. And for everybody else, I'll see you right now. Okay, bye. Well, everybody, that is it. Hopefully, this helps your dating life. Hopefully, well, either you're going to want to date or you're not after this show, because we talked it out. Again, thank you so much for listening. This week has flown by. I can't believe it's September already. We've got some other big shows coming up. We've got some Sweet Home Oklahoma interviews coming up. We've got a show about breastfeeding coming up this month. So we've got, and now, why am I talking about breastfeeding? Well, I'm not, but somebody else is. So, we've got stuff coming up, sugar. So, if you know the drill. If you need to leave questions, if you're dealing with something in life, go to DearMaddieShow.com. You can ask away there. There are other podcasts. You can listen to TBT Time with Jake and I. That's going strong. Riverdale's ramping up, and we're starting to do some teaser episodes for that. Also, we're going to be... because we need more shows. There's a new show called Bromans that's like hot British guys shirtless, like fighting gladiator wars in Britain. I don't know if we can get it because we don't live in England, but we're going to try. I think we can, because I think like 7 or 8 of you have posted on our social medias, whatever, that we need to watch this show. So it's kind of in our wheelhouse. So everybody, I love you very much. I hope the week is going well for you. I hope that wherever you are, again, that you're safe. Let's send our thoughts, our love, our prayers, whatever you believe in or whatever you want to do. Let's send that to those people afflicted. And if you have the money or the resources to donate to those places, please think about that. All right, everybody. I love you. See you next week.